There are designs which are so iconic and so recognisable that they become copied and parodied in their own right. The iPhone, the London Underground map, the Coca-Cola bottle, the ballpoint pen, or the Swiss Army knife. These are all so iconic you don't need a picture to think of what they look like. Why are they so iconic? It's their ease of use and their simplicity. Perhaps they're a revolutionary idea, and its simple design allows for people to use it far easier than might be thought otherwise. Perhaps it's been copied and parodied so much that it becomes ingrained in our mind. The periodic table of elements is iconic, both for design purposes and for chemistry purposes. It is easy to understand, and has made the study of chemistry easier for all. It is in every single school, in every single science classroom. It is something we've taken for granted our whole lives, but the creation of the periodic table is one of science's great inventions. It has allowed for the discovery and for the interest in chemical elements. Like photography, the periodic table exploits natural phenomena by way of human intervention. The periodic table is timeless. As long as there is chemistry, there will be a periodic table. From the discovery of copper, lead, gold, silver, and iron in prehistory, to the discovery of tessinine in 2009, the periodic table remains the calling point for all chemical elements. So what are chemical elements? In ancient Greece, there was thought to be only four elements: earth, water, air, and fire. But some Greek philosophers believed these elements were made up of smaller cubic particles, which is why it was so difficult to move earth around. During the Middle Ages, chemistry moved towards alchemy. Alchemists were obsessed with elements and being able to change, for example, lead into gold, as its unusual colour, rarity, and chemical inertness has made it of great value throughout history. Science, however, is not alchemy. As the scientific revolution changed and we gained knowledge through empirical observation, both Robert Boyle and Antoine Lavoisier thought the elements should be defined as a material that could not be broken down by any chemical means. In 1789, Lavoisier published a list of 33 substances, or elements, using his methodology of only empirically observed elements. The 33 include many elements we still classify today, but also things like light and heat. Interestingly, the discovery of elements tends to come very quickly and in large bunches. The reason? The introduction of new technologies like electricity or radioactivity and nuclear fission allowed for the isolation of elements and the manufacture of chemical reactions that were not previously possible. Where do elements get their names? Some of the elements, such as 61, promethium, come from the Greek god, as it was extremely difficult to get the element isolated. Helium comes from Helios, the Greek name for the sun, as it was first observed in the spectrum of the sun in 1868. Many elements are named after their colour, often using the Greek or Latin version, while 15 elements are named after places they were discovered: germanium, americium, or europium. But anyway, I digress. Of course, the periodic table isn't just a list of chemical elements. It's more complex than that. The table shows all manner of relationships amongst the elements. Historically, it was seen that Antoine Lavoisier was the founder of modern chemistry, but more recent scholarship suggests it was more of a collaborative effort amongst many scientists, and it was Lavoisier who was merely a good organiser and presenter of the knowledge that others had found. Even so, Lavoisier was able to elucidate knowledge and present it in a way that others understood. No mean feat. Lavoisier was able to use his wealth to create weighing scales to measure ever more precisely the changes in weight that substances go through. Lavoisier showed the essential element in burning, oxygen. Oxygen was discovered by Carl Scheele and Joseph Priestley. Priestley did not recognise it as an element, but Lavoisier did, and it was Lavoisier who coined the name. Whatever Lavoisier's contribution to chemistry, it was he who moved the study of elements away from the Greek and medieval chemists and towards modern science. In 1801, John Dalton published an article on meteorology. This work was to be one of the keys of the reintroduction of atomic theory into mainstream science. The idea hadn't quite died, but it was clear that it wasn't taken seriously. Dalton assumed that atoms were indestructible and unchangeable, and that they couldn't be transmuted, hence the separation of chemistry from alchemy. Secondly, Dalton believed in the unity of all matter. Thirdly, Dalton believed that the weight of the atom would lead to the bridge between microscopic views and viewable properties of matter. Dalton made many key observations, including a table of atomic weights, but crucially, and this is what convinced other scientists that Dalton was right, was that Dalton provided for a reason why atoms combine, and when they do so in a constant ratio. This is why we get carbon dioxide, when two oxygen atoms combine with one atom of carbon, or one oxygen atom and two carbon atoms, we get carbon monoxide. Following this, a remarkable fact began to be seen, or thought to be seen. Most of the widths of atoms ended up being multiples, approximately, of hydrogen. To some, it signalled that all elements were related, and everything was simply multiples of hydrogen. The first person to state this was William Prout. Prout rounded all the numbers off and put the hydrogen atom with a value of 1. During this period, the measuring of atoms was taken up with gusto by many scientists all around the world, and it was soon found that elements' weight was vastly different to the arbitrary number that had been given to them by scientists. Nevertheless, even though Prout's hypothesis was proved wrong, there was still a lot of work done on measuring atoms. Not long after, German chemist Wolfgang Dobrynner discovered another principle. He identified the existence of various groups of elements where one of the elements had chemical properties and an atomic weight roughly the average of two of the other elements. This became known as a triad. The discovery of these triads could have led to Dobrynner inventing the periodic table 50 years before it actually was, but he chose not to follow up the discovery by connecting any of the triads. With work continuing on the exploration of the atom, it became obvious to most that something needed to be done regarding the confusion over atomic weights. The result was the Karlsruhe Conference. Its aims were to clarify the atom and molecule and related issues. The result was the appearance of Stanislaw Cannizzaro on the scene. He convinced much of the scientific community at the time what an atom and a molecule should be defined as. He argued for a change in Dalton's values, and argued in a reprint of an 1858 paper what the values of the elements should be. The result was a set of consistent atomic weights Cannizzaro proved at the Karlsruhe Conference in 1860, which established the distinction between atomic and molecular weights, meaning the relative weights of the known elements could be compared to in a reliable manner. During the 1860s, much work was done on the development of spectroscopy. Spectroscopy is the technique of splitting light into its constituent wavelengths, in a similar way as prism splits light into rainbows of colour. The result of this was in the discovery of new elements. Having more elements meant less gaps and making organising known elements easier. The 1860s saw further questioning of Prout's theory that all elements were based off hydrogen. The sudden change in fashion away from Prout's theories resulted in scientists who still believe the hypothesis publishing their defences of the theory anonymously. Scientists now began to look for other relationships between elements, and they tried to focus on a grand integrated system that could bind all the elements together. In 1862, French geologist D. Champcourtois noticed that the properties of the elements are a function of their atomic weights. He published his findings, but he is not given much credit due to his publication not appearing in a chemistry journal, and because he didn't follow his study up. He arranged the numbers into what he termed, quote-unquote, increasing numbers along a spiral. The first turn of the spiral ended with oxygen, and the second full turn ended with sulphur. This system, too, never caught on for a variety of reasons, but perhaps most damning was that he just described it. The original article had no diagram. Dmitri Ivanich Mendeleev is the inventor of the periodic table of elements. Others may have claims and done bits here and there, but he deserves every credit. In a letter dated February 17, 1869, Mendeleev makes a comparison of the atomic weights of several elements. In the letter, he puts several elements in a horizontal comparison between the atomic weights, perhaps the first time a horizontal comparison was represented on paper. Later that same day, Mendeleev seemed to realise he could compare all the elements in a horizontal table, not just the ones he'd written in that letter. In the space of a day, he began to make horizontal comparisons of all the elements, and produced the first full periodic table of elements. This was the crucial first step. Having come up with a table and formalised it, Mendeleev announced the invention of the periodic table. He had 200 copies of his table printed off, and he sent them to chemists all over Russia and Europe. By March, it was in print in a Russian journal, and a few weeks later it was published in Germany. The published table comes in several divisions and subgroups. The first column of elements contains what is called a valence, or electrons involved in available chemical bond formations of 1, and divided into alkaline metals like lithium, sodium and potassium, and then the noble metals of copper, silver and gold. Furthermore, there were plenty of gaps in the table. Mendeleev went on to make predictions about three new elements that hadn't been discovered yet. So why did Mendeleev's system catch on, while six other tables produced in the decade before did not? Mendeleev's was the most comprehensive and complete, while he also worked harder at the table getting acceptance in the scientific community. Some believe it was the most popular form due to Mendeleev's predictions that led to his acceptance. And while the predictions of germanium, gallium, and scandium were significant, Only about half of his predictions based off the table became true. Mendeleev came to his predictions through primarily the estimating of atomic weights as well as other chemical and physical elements. Mendeleev was trying to fill in the gaps of the periodic table, specifically the one below aluminium, or aluminum if you're American, and the one below silicon. In 1871 he predicted the three elements, but it took 15 years before the three were isolated and identified. Despite the table being the best system, it took a while for Mendeleev's writing to appear in English. The first English announcement was in 1871, but Mendeleev's textbook took until 1890 to be translated into German, 1891 into English, and 1895 into French. Meanwhile, the basics had been understood by most scientists, but it really took until 1875 for it to be accepted when gallium was discovered. For this prediction, Mendeleev was awarded the Davy Medal in 1882 by the Royal Society, which is when some have argued that the system really started to be accepted into the scientific mainstream. The noble gases, historically called the inert gases, today understood as helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, and radion, was something nobody predicted. Once discovered, some thought it was a threat to the periodic system. The first to be discovered was argon, and it was hard to place. Discovered in 1894 by Lord Rayleigh and William Ramsay, it prompted much debate within the scientific community as people tried to work out its atomic weight, one of the foremost principles of the system. 2 years later, and helium was discovered, then krypton, neon, and xenon. A whole family had been discovered without having been predicted, and there was no idea where to put them on the table. Mendeleev did not believe an element could be completely inert, but it was suggested that a new group of elements should be placed to the right of the table between the halogens and the alkaline metals. Mendeleev claimed that this was a crucial part in the quote-unquote magnificent survival of the system for what had been quote-unquote a crucial test. Theories of the atom was brought back into mainstream science by John Dalton and were taken up by scientists all over the scientific world. Beginning in 1897 with J.J. Thomson's discovery of the electron, the whole scientific world was about to change. Ernest Rutherford then proposed the nuclear structure of the atom, and in 1920 the proton and neutron were discovered. This had been caused by the discovery of X-rays in 1895 and radioactivity in 1896. Rutherford would later be the first to split the atom, and this led Henry Moseley to discover that a better order for the periodic system would be its atomic number rather than atomic weight. Radium and polonium were discovered soon after, meaning the periodic table needed vast updating. Just to clarify, the atomic number is the number of protons in the nucleus of the atom. In 1911, Rutherford, following experiments, revived the idea of a planetary atom, where electrons orbit around a central nucleus. From this, Rutherford concluded that the charge of an atom is half its atomic weight. This was independently verified by Charles Barkler, and was one of the major stepping stones towards the modern periodic table. The probing of the nucleus led to the discovery of the atomic number and isotopes, and the discovery of the atomic number leads one back to Prout's hypothesis that all elements are composites of hydrogen. He wasn't quite right, but all atoms were multiples of a single unit or atomic number, or as we call them now, the proton. The discoverer of the atomic number was Anton van den Broek, not Rutherford as some have stated. Van den Broek was an amateur scientist who had trained in law, but he often wrote scientific papers. He suggested the Alphon particle. Van den Broek suggested that this particle could replace Prout's theory that all elements are composites of one basic particle. Each number of Alphons would correspond to a particular chemical element. All even numbers of an Alphon particle would match that of an element. An atom of uranium with an atomic weight of 240 would have 120 alphons. In his 1907 paper, van den Broek mapped out a new table with his new idea. There were now 41 gaps between hydrogen and uranium. In 1911, van den Broek published a second paper which dropped the idea of alphons, but retained the idea of successive elements differing by 2 units of weight. It was known that the charge of an atom was half its atomic weight, and since this was the case, the nuclear charge could define the position in the table. Each element in the periodic table would have a nuclear charge greater by 1 than the previous element. In 1913, van den Broek linked the serial number with the charge on each atom and disconnected it with the atomic weight. Rutherford accepted this link, even though it was by an amateur scientist. Rutherford would later say, quote, "The original suggestion made by van den Broek that the charge on the nucleus is equal to the atomic number and not the atomic weight seems very promising," close quotes. So now we get to Henry Moseley, who gets most of Vandenberg's credit. Moseley died in the First World War at 26. He only wrote two brief articles that established the atomic number rather than weight as superior in ordering the elements, and he estimated there was a total of 92 naturally occurring elements. Moseley set out to test Vandenberg's idea that you could characterize each element according to its atomic number. Moseley experimented with various elements and discovered a fundamental quality of elements, and confirmed that the number of protons in a nucleus is the atomic number, and this was the best way to order elements. In Moseley's second paper in April 1914, he reported on 30 further elements. Moseley began to establish the importance of the atomic number and at the same time shoot down various claims by other scientists that they'd found new elements. What remaining gaps they were filled after Moseley's death. In the 1920s and 1930s saw the discovery of the first 92 elements. In 1939, francium number 87 was discovered, and in 1940, ascertine element 85 was discovered. The final of the 92 was neptunium, discovered as part of a nuclear reaction, and it was the last of the natural 92 to be discovered. Vandenberg's suggestion and Moseley's experimentations brought back the idea of Prout's theory that all elements were composites of hydrogen. That all the atomic numbers were multiples of hydrogen is now understood, but what was discovered around this time, with added help from Rutherford and Thomson, was that all nuclei consisted of a number of positive charges, and this was a constant amongst the elements. This was further highlighted when Rutherford was able to transmute elements into another using radioactivity, from alchemy to chemistry, and now back to alchemy. The discovery of the electron was one of the most important events, not just for the periodic table, but for physics and science generally. Before it was discovered, the atom was not understood well. Mendeleev indeed rejected the idea, thinking the atom shouldn't be probed any deeper. There were ideas regarding the electron in the last decade of the 19th century, but none really followed up with the experiments until J.J. Thomson began to look into it. Beginning with the use of cathode rays, Thomson, the story goes, knew electrons were negatively charged, and it led him to the discovery by using an extremely high electrical charge in a vacuum that the cathode rays showed a deflection due to an electrical field. From this, Thomson tried to produce a theory of the atom, but with a lack of knowledge, it was way off. But Thomson did have two lasting legacies. The electron held the key on where something should go on the table, and that the difference in elements on the table differs by only one addition of an electron. This then led to the theory of how did the electron orbit the nucleus. James Clerk Maxwell's theory had it that any circulating body should lose energy through radiation, and so the orbiting electrons should spiral into the nucleus, and yet they don't. These issues were solved by Niels Bohr, a Danish physicist. His quantum theory of the hydrogen atom was revolutionary. He concluded that in the planetary model of the atom, additional rings of the electron are formed outside already full rings. Bohr proposed that electrons would be stable if they remained in certain orbits, and would only lose energy if it went into transition from one orbit to another more stable orbit. He also suggested that there was a lowest level of energy needed for an electron to undergo a downward trajectory. Bohr's theory did two things. It established that the electron should occupy the outer shell. But for now, we'll go back to the elements themselves. Prout's theory that all elements come from hydrogen can seem to be false, but another strand of it came to be seen as true. William Crookes, a scientist and the founder of the journal Chemical News, announced in 1861 that a new element, thallium, was discovered. As he announced it, he came up with the theory of the inorganic element. In 1879, he speculated that all elements come from the stars. Chemical elements evolve in stars as they cooled from a plasma state through the oscillation of giant electrical forces. This idea was further developed by Arthur Eddington, who thought that adding four hydrogen atoms together could form helium, essentially transmutation, which Rutherford had discovered in 1920 by bombarding nuclei with protons. Currently, there are 118 elements discovered or synthesized. Around 90 occur naturally. Some, like technetium, were first synthesized and then found in nature. The synthesizing of elements has gone on for over 100 years, and progresses with the proliferation of other technologies. However, the idea remains the same. Bombarding the nucleus of an element with small particles to increase the atomic number and change the identity of the nucleus. This all stems from an experiment Rutherford did when he bombarded nitrogen with alpha particles and transformed it into another element. The oxygen isotope that formed meant that Rutherford was perhaps the world's first true alchemist. It's somewhat easy to carry out experiments like this for anything under element 20, calcium, but once the elements get heavier, it proves more and more difficult to bombard it. Thankfully, this is where particle accelerators come in, such as the cyclotron. This made it possible to accelerate alpha particles to hundreds or thousands the speed that alpha particles normally travel at. The synthesis of elements beyond 92 started with 93, Neptunium, which was followed by uranium in the periodic table, just as Neptune follows Uranus. And yes, I know it's Uranus, but it's not as fun to say. 94 to 97 followed in the 1940s, with plutonium also being discovered. In 1952, a thermonuclear explosion was carried out, and an intense series of neutrons were produced, enabling people to see the reactions that would not have taken place otherwise. Elements 101 to 106 were produced in a Cold War race, while elements 107 to 112 were produced by Germany in a lab. Elements 113 to 118 have proved very difficult to do. The heavier the element, the harder it is to make in a lab. But even now, number 119 and 120 are being experimented with to try and make. There will, I don't think, be an end to the periodic table and it growing. We don't have much use for any of these new elements being discovered, but the history of science shows that useless esoteric knowledge doesn't always stay esoteric useless knowledge. You can never know too much about the world, because it may just prove useful in a place you least expect. The periodic table as a heuristic model has not been beaten by anybody. The table can predict, organise and rule the life of one group of scientists, the chemist. To follow its history is to see how important an invention is and was to the development of the scientific world. The periodic table continues to stimulate the science world in discovering more and more elements. Just like physics has Newton and Einstein, and biology has Darwin, chemistry has Mendeleev, and the periodic table of elements. A perfect distillation of all the natural world has to offer, put into a simple, natural, ergonomic table. For all these reasons, the periodic table of elements is listed at number 65 on my list of the greatest inventions of all time.